Good morning again. Good afternoon. Good evening. And just so lovely, as always, to sit with everyone. And I'm definitely personally doing kind of a deep dive in the teachings around compassion. So we're going to stay with that theme that we've been traveling, or that path that we've been traveling together about working different elements of space, spaciousness, and water elements, and loving kindness and compassion, which is kind of where we've been the last 6 weeks, a month or so. And I want to stay with the teachings of compassion today, in part as I've been sitting with this and the reading I've been doing, really, it's like, what else is there? And how can we undertake the practice to pay attention to what it is that we are actually practicing, because we're always practicing something. We're always creating habits or sustaining habits or solidifying habits. And the one of the things I love about this practice is it really gives us an opportunity to check it out. What am I actually doing? We can have aspirations about what we want to be doing, which are beautiful and necessary. And then there's also a willingness, a courage to actually turn towards, well, how am I actually showing up and what am I actually doing? And I'm actually in Bend, Oregon today, and I'll be here next week too. And my mileage is going to be off a little bit, but I think I'm about 50 to 60 miles away from the Bootleg Fire, which is one of the worst fires Oregon has seen and one of the worst fires happening in the West. I have completely blue skies over my head. And Tolan and I were speaking earlier because the winds have been shifting east, that her air is terrible. And this undeniable interconnectivity of our lives. And it's always been us. And we saw, we've experienced it in these last 2 years or so, or 15 months with COVID, that it's touching all of us, that we really, part of the awakening that I believe is happening, hopefully, globally, is this look at, wow, we really are profoundly connected. And to be able to land in that truth as a way of, okay, given that truth, how do I want to show up? Knowing that another person's suffering is not separate from mine. And again, I'm in the neighborhood of the fire, and Tolan's having trouble walking because of the air quality. That way, and this is just one tiny example of the ways in which we can start to open our awareness to hold, this human realm is full of suffering, right? We know this. In the States, there can be a conditioning, at least in the dominant culture, of like, if you're suffering, you've done something wrong. You haven't worked hard enough or gone to the right school or made enough money or take some, distract yourself to not feel it. Not always the most helpful lesson to be in training our young ones coming up, that somehow if something goes wrong, it's our fault. It's like, no, things are going to go wrong. But rarely, rarely do we actually get what we think we want. I found Christina Feldman's another one of her books. Sorry, I didn't do the camera angle of Compassion by Christina Feldman, in addition to her book by Boundless Heart, which I'm loving. But the idea that there's a quarter of our mind's energy, or a quarter of our suffering, is in response to conditions, external conditions that are true and in the world, and three quarters of our energy is spent making sure that quarter doesn't happen, if that makes sense. But the ways in which our mind can kind of push away from our own suffering, and certainly push away the suffering of others, that there's a way we can choose a willful blindness, or through our own conditioning, through privilege, as a white woman of privilege, I can choose in ways that others cannot. And how do we start to lessen that, to be able to be like, actually, I don't have that choice anymore. Being able to hold the interconnectivity, the interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh speaks of these humans traveling on this tilting planet, to borrow from Maya Angelou a little. So I want to read a little from, actually, I'm going to wait. One of the things in reading this book last night, was so struck by is Christina Feldman's pointing to the capacity we have to choose. And as I was saying earlier, that's what I love about this practice, is it really gives us the skills, the tools to be able to reflect upon what is the patterning of mind? If left on its own, where does the mind go? Does it typically go to a place of like complaining and this isn't right and this isn't right and da da da? Or does it go to more a place of gentleness? And different days, different times, you know, it's all there. So one, being able to hold ourselves gently, that yeah, these parts of ourselves that we don't like, as I speak, I think I pulled in the guest house last week of like the malice, the bitterness, it all comes here. Okay. It doesn't mean we're a bad person. It's just like, I'm human. And this range of emotion, this keyboard has a lot of different notes, and being able to stay open to that without beating ourselves up or others who will also be speaking from places of that malice or that rage. How do we hold on to our equanimity, our steadiness? And last week, I shared a line from Christina about the extended family of compassion. And this is that that phrase has really stuck with me as being able to kind of tease out the complexity that is part of compassion. Yes, there's the word in Pali is karuna, the quivering of the heart, which is the natural response of an open heart, and the ways in which there's so much suffering. We're aware of so much suffering, whether it's from the phone or the newspaper or talking to people or all the social media. At no other time in history have we been so able to see the suffering of others, and to a point where sometimes it's like, oh, I can't do it anymore. It's too much. So in this, I would add that discernment comes in as a close relative to compassion of what can the heart and system actually tolerate. I think I referenced this last week, but a book by Oprah Winfrey and Bruce Perry. And Bruce Perry making the point that we're overloaded. The system was designed to live much more simply with much less input. And how can we hold ourselves with compassion of this tremendous amount of input coming in? And many of us are finding as the world's opening back up and the calendar starts to fill back in of expectations and things to do, and blah, 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 it's just like, whoa, it's too much. Because the system was to, again, we all walked through COVID in different ways, different experiences. But for many of us, there was a slowing down of social interaction, and then to have the volume turn back up, it's a lot. And how do we honor, protect the sense gates, so to speak, such that when there is a sense of overwhelm, like, okay, you know what, I can't do certain things, to honor our capacity to know if we can trust in what our body is saying, don't do this. Rest, slow down, have compassion for the natural rhythm of our own systems. And in that offering of compassion, to first slow down enough to pay attention, how am I doing? Is this okay? Sometimes we don't have the choice about the pacing, and that's a different thing. But where there is choice, coming back to this really essential quality that is supported by the practice of being able to choose. Where does my mind go? What am I doing with my time? Where is my energy, whether it's energy of the mind or the energy of the body and through our actions, where am I investing this? And what am I cultivating? The oft-told story of the grandson asking the grandfather, wise elder, as the boy is struggling with, I feel like I have these two parts of myself, the part that's gets so petty and jealous and angry, and the part that's really kind and gentle. And grandfather, which one will win? And the grandfather says, whichever one you feed. And this invitation of the practice is to be able to pay attention. Which one am I actually feeding? And which one do I want to be feeding? Because they're not always the same, right? The habits can be one way, where the aspirations can be another. And by slowing down with a sense of gentleness and compassion, we can start to check in. Oh, actually, I'm feeding this other one, even though I don't really want to. There's a poem from Michael Lunig. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. There are only two feelings, love and fear. There are only two languages, love and fear. Only two activities, love and fear. There are only two motives, two procedures, two frameworks, two results, love and fear, love and fear. and personally, in my life, in some ways, I feel like this is just a personal sense of the world that we come here to learn something. And as a friend of mine's mother said, the soul doesn't care what it puts the personality through. It wants to learn what it needs to learn. And for me in this lifetime, working with fear has been a big teacher for me. My childhood home was lovely in many ways, in the war zone in other ways, and how to, for me to loosen the bounds of fear and being able to see where I am moving from a place of fear. And again, this ability to choose, oh wait, what's motivating me? Where am I moving from? And how do I want to show up? And knowing sometimes we all are going to get caught in our, whatever the reactionary part of us can be, whether when we lose connection with the prefrontal cortex that keeps us pretty steady and connected when we're in that limbic system, we're all going to have different patternings of reactivity, the flight, the fight, the fear, the collapse. Okay. That's part of it, right? This is part of the human condition. Nobody really gets out without understanding. This is part of how we move in the world. And again, as I have said a number of times already, the gift of this practice is being able to be like, what's actually happening? What's actually true? What is it? What are the stories I'm telling myself that I might have known, heard since I was 8 that aren't relevant anymore? And can we have the courage to kind of cut that tie to say, that's not actually true anymore. It doesn't fit in how I want to show up. And the strategies we had as kids that saved us, got us through our childhoods, really necessary, skillful, good job. Yes. And as we move into our different stages of adulthood, we can reflect about, does this strategy still work? Maybe, maybe not. And being able again to make choices. So one of the things I was really moved by in Christina's book on compassion was her illustration of the different archetypes of Guan Yin, the compassion. So I want to read these archetypes in the book and then move into an exercise, if that's okay. So, but first I'll read a little bit about what she said about compassion. She writes, compassion is not just a feeling, it is a response to pain that is deeply rooted in wisdom, that the response is deeply rooted in wisdom, not so much the pain. In the midst of despair or pain, you may be convinced that no one has ever felt this way before. Yet there is no pain you can experience that has not been experienced before by another in a different time or place. Our emotional world is universal. This is kind of where I was getting at, this sense of there's a fire in my neighborhood, so to speak, and across the country, others are feeling it. We are connected universally. And I love this notion that there's no pain, no experience really that any of us have gone through that hasn't already been gone through by other humans at different times and places. And just to hang with that for a moment of like, oh, right. That we can tend to feel like my suffering, my experience, no one else has had it. It's so bad. there can be, Sarbach has that line, like real, but not true. Like that can feel real. And being able to have that larger perspective, like, yeah, but it might not be true. It can feel that way. It can feel real. Is it true? No, because we all have these beating hearts that get hurt and scared and wounded, and we get angry and we act out in those ways. Right? This is the human realm. Our emotional world is universal. Compassion is born of wisdom through genuine insight into the nature of reality, through an appreciation of impermanence and all its implications, and through a willingness to be aware of suffering and its causes. And impermanence is a huge piece. It's part of that extended family of compassion, being able to understand all that arises, all that is born will die. All that comes into being will end. All the things we are connected to, we will lose in some way. And this works well when things are really terrible. Like, okay, it's not going to be like this forever. And it's harder when there are things that we're so deeply attached to and so love, knowing there is truth and we will be separated from that which we love. And it's not because anyone's done anything wrong. It's a universal truth of all things that arise, pass away. Compassion holds within it resilience and equanimity. Patience, we explored together last week. receptivity, awareness, and honesty are all part of that paradigm. And I'm sorry, I had totally bookmarked where the archetypes were. And so bear with me just a moment. Ah, sorry. Okay, here we go. Thank you for your patience. Okay. She writes, and it's if you bear with me, I'm just going to read this for a little bit so you can close your eyes and just hear this. But she writes, compassion is multifaceted. Over the century, Avalokiteshvara or Kuan Yin has been portrayed in a variety of different forms. At times, she is depicted as a feminine presence, her face serene, her arms outstretched, her eyes open, embodying a warm and receptive presence. So if you can conjure up that image in your mind, or if that conjures up the image of someone else that you've known personally or imagined, that serene, calm, open embodiment of warmth, that's one expression. She's often portrayed seated on a lotus flower, symbolizing the opening and the flowering of the heart and mind. In one hand, she holds a book of the teachings, symbolizing her non-dualistic understanding. In the other, she holds a vase, signifying the pouring out of boundless love and compassion. In China, she is sometimes portrayed holding a willow branch, symbolizing her capacity to bend in the face of the most fierce storms and winds of life without being broken. A weeping willow represents her compassionate care for the world. At times, Avalokiteshvara is painted with 1,000 arms, 1,000 hands, and at the center of each hand is an eye, depicting awareness of anguish in her all-embracing responsivity. Kuan Yin is also portrayed as an armed warrior, laden with multiple weapons, a crossbow, a thunderbolt, a spear, a shield. She embodies the fierce, uncompromising face of compassion. She is the protector, the guardian who is committed to uprooting the roots of sorrow. At home, I have Kuan Yin on riding a dragon. And then again, that fierce warrior energy. And so I'm going to ask you, if your eyes aren't already closed, so close your eyes. And to just feel into these different archetypes, images of this compassionate one, from the gentle, the serene, the soft form of compassion, to the wisdom, the holder of the wisdom with the book and the vase of boundless love. That kind of wise elder is the image that comes to me of that. And then that warrior pose, either riding the dragon or in full armor, ready to wage war to end suffering. And as I name these three, and you may have others that come to mind as archetypal embodiments of fierce compassion that can have that firm no, whether it's a no of protection of others, those that are in need of our protection or of ourselves. And perhaps it may be useful to kind of feel into each one, whether it's familiar or unfamiliar, like, oh, I don't want to feel that way. Can you stretch a little bit to perhaps feel into that composed, soft, gentle, again, a line from Sylvia, sort of seeing the world with grandmotherly eyes that has a quality of equanimity, again, that softness, open arms, you know, the arms that might pull you in, deep nurturance. Are there ways in which you felt you have embodied that expression? Or that you have been the recipient of that form of compassion? Playing both sides, as you will, of your own capacity to embody this, whether it's felt, yes, I've done that, or aspirationally, oh, that might be something to incorporate into the toolkit, as it were, to be able to embody that expression of compassion, that soft, serene, open-armed, come. And that next, that second form, more of, this is more my version, of that wise elder with the 10,000 hands that can see all, the book of wisdom, the chalice of boundless love, There's a, in my mind, a kind of regal, again, an equanimity, wise embodiment of compassion. I can stay very steady in the face of all the sorrows of the world and yet stay open. The holding that willow branch will not be broken. So there's a, there too is a fierceness. I can handle this. I have enough faith in my capacity to meet this suffering. I will not be bowed by this. What does it feel like to touch into that energetically? And they may or not feel distinct. Subtle differences, maybe, maybe not. But just allowing, again, a sense of, can you embody that? What does that feel like? Or have you been, have you encountered that from someone else? That particular expression of compassion. And then the third one I'm going to ask us to play with is that, that warrior, that fierce compassion. Armed warrior laden with multitude of weapons, a crossbow, a thunderbolt, a spear, a shield, perhaps on the back of the dragon. And there's a fierceness, right? That doesn't come from rage, because that can also have a quality of fierceness and protection, and the flame of rage can also can burn and can also burn us out. But this warrior energy is grounded in wisdom and love. And can we allow ourselves, imagine ourselves into this expression of the warrior, the fierce compassion that says, not on my watch. The protector, the guardian. And what does it feel like to allow yourself to touch into, imagine this expression of compassion? And again, both sides to feel it within ourselves. If possible, imagine it. If it doesn't feel possible, what might it be like to embody this expression of compassion? And have you ever been on the receiving end of that kind of compassion? Was this as a final question? Is there another way that you personally embody compassion? So when you are in that place of a wise, open, steady heart and the mind that is quiet, what would your archetype of compassion be? It may not be any of those three that I just shared, but being able just to reflect in these last moments or so, if you were to create an archetype of your own manifestation of compassion, what would she look like? What might be her tools? Is it just the spear, the crossbow, the vase with endless love, the book? And if you could choose your own artifacts, as it were, that could help strengthen your compassion, what would they be? Would you be riding a dragon? Allow the mind to be playful and creative. What's your own embodiment, manifestation, image, archetype of compassion? And how might it be to allow yourself to move in the world with her as your guide? So stop there and very much appreciate your staying with me through the talk and the guided imagery and take a moment. But I would love to hear from you either responses to this talk on compassion or maybe what came up for you. And certainly this is also a time if there are any practice questions. But again, we'd just love to hear from you all and the deepening of what I hope is a sense of community to be able to hear from each other, not just me. So again, thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.